We've been doing the metta meditation little bit by little bit, step by step, and trying to get a feel for the different stages and signposts along the way, all of which are merely descriptions, merely approximations, merely suggestions of the kinds of experience which we hope to develop or we can move towards. And of course every person who listens to the meditation teachings will have a different experience. And of course when discussing with people individually their meditation, it becomes very obvious that people's minds are so different, and for some people can follow their instructions in particular meditation very easily. For others, it's just not possible. They're just out of the question. And so all we can try to do is give something that's generally as going to be as good and useful as we can, and particularly we give instructions in the particular method of meditation for those people who have a liking and an affinity and a response to that particular way of meditating. And if you don't, then you do another way of meditating, that's all right. So last week we had gone up to the stage of the third person, the equanimous person. Having started out the meditation, going through each stage from the mindful awareness, and then we introduced a new practice of developing the four iddhipadas, the four bases of spiritual power, or psychic power, enthusiasm, energy, awareness, and inquiry. And suggesting that when we are, especially when we're at this stage of the third person, because the concomitant of this third stage, because it's a neutral attitude towards that person is neutral, and so the defilement which can tend to arise at this stage is the defilement of boredom, lack of interest. We don't care about the person. And so to overcome that boredom and lack of interest, the direct antidote to that is developing the four iddhipadas. And so I talked a little bit about that and a little bit about how to develop that specifically as a meditative technique. Of course, many other ways to develop this as well, but this is just specifically as a meditation technique, meditation trick. And then doing this for a few minutes before starting the meditation, then going to metta for oneself, developing the preliminary nimitta, feeling of metta soaking through the body, using oneself as an object, then the second person, the loved one, maintaining and deepening that feeling of metta for the loved one, and then for the third person, and then seeing if we can sustain that an energy level for the third person for a reasonable period of time. Usually there's not too many difficulties doing these second and third stages. If we can get the first stage done, then the second and third stage usually not too hard. They're pretty straightforward. If it's, you know, as long as we can avoid this problem in the third stage of just the mind dropping off and going into a kind of a neutral sense of unawareness. That's the main pitfall at this stage. But assuming we've got enough energy and we can continue keeping the feeling of metta soaking right through the body, the mind focused and holding the whole body image of metta, the preliminary nimitta, right through the third stage then, and if that still feels strong and good and clear and the energy feels strong, and then we're ready to try the fourth stage, and it's metta for the disliked person. Now, before talking about the disliked person, I'd just like to introduce another preliminary practice. And this is a preliminary practice of doing metta for one's skeleton, metta for one's bones. Now, this particular practice is not necessarily got any particular connection with this fourth stage of metta, okay? So there's no particular reason why I'm introducing it here rather than at any other stage of metta. This is something that Ajahn Mahachachai teaches and in more recent years has emphasized more often as a preliminary to meditation practice. And it's especially good for people who have a good visual sense, able to visualize their own skeleton. But it's generally speaking good for everybody to do it. But especially, of course, the counterindication of doing body contemplation, as always, is if somebody has a very kind of negative and unbalanced self-image, then in that case, it's not a good idea to be doing body contemplation, especially a lot of it, in this way. And so this is why I've delayed talking about it, because I want to make sure that that when we're doing metta, that we're very grounded on that very positive emotional attitude first, and then we're ready to come and doing the skeleton meditation, and we'll do it in the right way without causing any problems. So to do this practice, if we come back to the start of meditation, we do the mindful awareness. Now then, if we want to do the 4 Iddhipada practice, then we do the 4 Iddhipada practice. And then we start to investigate our skeleton. Now when we do that, you can, if you want, it's useful to just use a meditation word like bones and just repeat the word bones to yourself. If you find that the bones become clear anyway, then that's not necessary, but that's just going to help your concentration a little bit. And the idea is to get an idea, an awareness of one's own skeleton as it sits residing in one's own body here and now. So this is a slightly different way of doing this body contemplation than we often find, where it's more like a kind of visualizing a skeleton or a corpse that's almost like external. Okay, both ways of practicing are fine. There's not like one way is right and one's wrong. But this way that we're doing it here is specifically as a preliminary for the metta practice, okay? And so, of course, this really has two main benefits to be done here. One is that, of course, the metta practice is specifically geared towards overcoming anger and hatred and ill will. And although, of course, it will work on all defilements, but most directly works to overcome anger and ill will. And to complement this, then the imagining of one's body overcoming greed and lust. And so they're like a pair. One's overcoming both of these things. So excessive attachment to the body, okay, this kind of feeling of indulging, feeling that the body is me and mine and so on and so forth. These are the kinds of things that one's learning to overcome. Not through developing an aversion to the body, but just through developing a realistic idea of it. And so to do this very simply, you can just imagine how the bones are inside your body. So you can start with anywhere you like. As you do the practice, you may find that one or other of your bones is more obvious, more clear. There might be some part of the body where the bones become clear to you. In that case, start there. Otherwise, you can maybe just start, say, at the top of the head, and just visualizing inside your body, not externally, your own skeleton gradually moving down and just trying to get that image as clear as you can. Don't worry if it's not particularly clear. Don't worry if you can't see, you know, we're not expecting people. Remember, this is just a preliminary practice. We're not expecting you to have a clear, definite, very strong nimitta or anything at this stage. But just to imagine what the bones are like, and to both see them and to feel them. Okay, and this is the important part which Ajahn Mahachatchai emphasizes, tang ru tang hen, both to know it and to see it. And so this means that as well as visualizing and like seeing the color and shape of the bones, but you can also feel what the bones are like inside you. And it's actually quite interesting because normally we don't notice this, but the bones actually make up a very significant part of our own sort of internal sense of perception. And if you're not clear, if it's not clear to you what that's like, then imagine what it would be like if you took all your bones out. Imagine if you took them out one by one and threw them away. You'd collapse in like a kind of pile of jelly. You'd be just like a blob of liver or something on the ground. You wouldn't have any shape. And so the difference between that and what you are now, which may not be much difference for all I know, but whatever difference there is because of the bones. Yeah. So this is what gives you the shape and the structure. And so when you reflect on it in this way, you realize you can actually feel the bones giving shape to your arms, to your back, to your chest, to your head, to your hips and legs and so on. And you can actually feel what the bones are like in there. And so to move gradually, little bit by little bit, through the body, getting an idea of what each of the bones both looks like and feels like. Okay, now for some people, they will see it more as a visual thing, for some people more as a feeling thing. It doesn't matter, as long as you get some kind of idea of what the bones are. And just gradually move through the whole body. It only take a couple of minutes, maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes to do that at the most, if you're doing it as a preliminary. If you want to, if you like that kind of meditation, then by all means just, you can just take that as your whole meditation. And you can play around with the bones. For example, you can just take each one out piece by piece and just throw them out and just have emptiness instead. Or you can take out your bones and put them in front of you and then disintegrate them, turn them into ashes, and so on and so forth. So if you like playing around with those practices, then just you can do that. But here we're just talking about doing it as a preliminary for metta practice. So it has those two benefits. One is to overcome excessive attachment to the body, and the other one is it helps you to really ground your awareness inside your body. So we've all been right the way through this practice, we've been grounding our awareness inside the physical feeling of the body, and this helps us to do that even more, make it even more concrete, even more centered, okay? And so this is why I'm suggesting doing it at this stage with the fourth person, even though it's not necessarily connected with that fourth person. But here, this is the time when the strength and clarity of your concentration will become very important. So when you're starting, you do the mindful awareness practice, and then if you want to develop the four Dhipadas, then you develop this perception of the skeleton, Artika Sanya. And after doing that, then just move on to metta and then gradually fill your skeleton with metta. Okay, so once you've got a clear idea of your whole skeleton, then fill that skeleton with metta. Okay, just as before you were filling the whole body more generally, now you just fill your skeleton with metta. Because that skeleton is like the center of the body, then it will kind of suffuse out through to the whole body. Gradually, as you continue through the metta practice, once you start, you spread the metta through your skeleton, and that's where your focus is. But as you continue, you're not paying attention to the skeleton anymore, okay? You're paying attention to the metta. And so that perception of the skeleton fades away, and you have more just the feeling of the metta inside the body. But nevertheless, you still have the kind of the residual strength and groundedness of the metta practice there. So it's a very, very lovely way of integrating these two practices of the metta and the body contemplation. So if you can do that practice to start and then go through up to the fourth stage, and then things start to get really interesting when you hit the fourth stage. Because this is where you start to realize, have you really got metta or not? Have you been fooling yourself? Have you been actually dealing with your issues, or have you just been avoiding them? Avoiding is okay sometimes, but eventually the time comes when you have to turn around and say, hang on, right. This is where the real testing ground is. This is where I really have to give everything, go of everything. And so when you come to this fourth person, metta for the disliked person, of course, you know, you have to be careful not to think of that disliked person before this stage, okay? You know who it's going to be, but you don't think of it before this stage. When you get to that stage, you've got to be very careful. Because what tends to happen very easily, very normally, you think of that disliked person and you're developing metta for them. Now don't when I say think of it, it means you just use their name in the words of metta, direct the mind towards that name. But you don't start thinking about that person, okay? You don't start letting the mind run into a narrative and a story about that person. And this is where you see the trickiness of the mind, because the narrative will start out being perfectly nice and perfectly innocuous and will involve an entirely sympathetic and compassionate and reasonable analysis of all those persons' faults. Which is a perfectly reasonable thing for you to be doing as you're sitting there doing metta meditation, you know. And and before you know it, whoom, the mind's taken off. And you can drop into very strong feelings of anger straight away. You feel the metta's gone completely. And this always reminds me, this is a kind of an image which I always have in my mind when thinking about this. I'm not sure quite why it is. But this particular thing happened. Maybe there was a connection between my meditation and something and some work that I was doing when I was in Malaysia. But this happened one time when I was carrying a sheet of plywood. We were doing some building in the cave place I was at, and I was carrying a sheet of plywood, and there was a strong wind. And if you've ever tried to carry, you can imagine what it's like trying to carry a sheet of plywood in the strong wind, and you have to like turn the sheet of plywood directly into the wind, so it's facing right into the wind, and that's the only way you can carry it. And if you get it a little bit out of alignment with the wind will catch it behind it and tear it out of your hands. Yeah, it becomes like a sail, even just a tiny bit out of alignment. And that really reminded me of what it was like doing metta for this fourth person. If you keep that focus right on the nail, right focus right there, then it's okay, yeah? And you don't allow yourself to deviate. But as soon as you get out of line just a tiny bit, the mind will be taken off. And so this is, and then your feeling of metta goes, disintegrates, and you have to go back and start it all over again, okay? And so because of this, at this stage, your mindfulness will become very strong, okay? Partly because you know that, okay? So partly it's your programming. You know that, okay, you're getting to this fourth stage and your meditation's getting quite deep, yeah? So there's like you know that that's the case. But also there's something more instinctual. It's more like you're smelling it. It's like the hounds who are on a hunt, and when they get a smell of the fox, they immediately go straight towards it. And so this is like that feeling in the fourth stage is when you get a smell of it, you know, now this is where my mind is wanting to be heading. This is where the energy of my mind starts to focus in. And so both partly consciously, but also much more so instinctively, the mind starts to get very energized and very mindful. Mindfulness becomes incredibly sharp at this point. And then you start to realize, you know, what actual mindfulness means, yeah, to actually watching the mind and holding it with that meditation absolutely dead still and very strong for a long, long time, and noticing any kind of slight waver or wobble in that sense of awareness there. So the mind can still wobble, you can still think about things or whatever, but you'll know it very quickly and bring it back. Usually, you know, quickly and bring it back. And so as you keep that sense of focus, it's tremendous, like almost ferocious energy comes up, and the mind's kind of leaping towards the meditation object. It's eager to pursue the meditation object, and the kind of any kind of lassitude or slight boredom or something you might have had in the third stage vanishes, and this kind of very strong energy comes up because your mind knows that now this is my only task. I've covered all my quarters, I've covered all the things I need to do. I only have one task left to do, and if I can do this task, I will do something that's very, very difficult. I will accomplish something that's very, very important. And we've heard all these words, these very beautiful words, love thine enemy. Yeah? Love thine enemy. And yet, how hard is it to actually do that? To actually do that? To actually feel that complete and total sense of giving and commitment in one's love for that person who you've nurtured ill will, bad thoughts or bad perceptions about previously. And so this disliked person, it doesn't have to be somebody who, you know, it doesn't have to be like a mortal enemy or someone you wish harm to or anything like that, but just somebody who gets on your nerves, yeah? Somebody who pushes your buttons, yeah? Somebody who, it's best to, generally speaking, it's best to choose somebody who's got overall relatively good qualities, okay? Not somebody who's like really, maybe really confused in their mind or something like that. You shouldn't choose someone like that. Someone who's relatively together and has good qualities, but who just annoys you and makes you angry, okay? And so you choose somebody like that, and then just you just go for it and just hold the mind there as best you can, for as long as you can, okay? Now what will happen as the mind leaps towards that object with kind of in eagerness is that one's perception of the body will start to fade, okay? So up until now, we've been very embodied in our meditation. We've been really feeling that practice, that metta, sitting and conscious inside the physical frame of our body. And now the mind is starting to go inside. It's starting to go in beyond the body. Okay, not out leaving the body behind. It's not like an out-of-body experience. But it's going inside that awareness of the body where the physical aspect of that becomes less and less relevant, less and less of interest. And so the mind is approaching or gathering strength in its one-pointedness, okay? So this one-pointedness has a number of dimensions. One dimension of it is one-pointedness in time, that one maintains awareness of just one object over a long period of time. And it's also a one-pointedness with the object, so that one's aware of only one object at that time and not aware of other things. So awareness of one object means you're only aware of mind consciousness, okay? So this is the thing which is quite, I find quite ridiculous, to be frank, in quite a lot of teachings on samatha meditation, that they say you can be in jhana or samadhi and still be hearing things or still be you know, feeling your body. This is many pointedness, okay? Not one point. One means one. Citta ekagrata means one pointedness of mind. The mind is aware of mind consciousness only. You cannot get deep one pointedness based on any of the other senses, because the other senses always have the mind mixed in with them, okay, or accompanying them. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. So even though we can get relatively concentrated by using something visual or a sound, and we can increase our concentration, but there'll always be at least two kinds of consciousness operating, the sense consciousness and the mind consciousness. But to go to deep one-pointedness, one goes into just mind consciousness alone. And so the sounds tend to fade away. Not that the sounds you're listening to disappear, but of course you're not listening to them anymore. The body, feeling of the body tends to become less relevant, to fade away when going in, but without you noticing it. That's the whole point. If you're noticing it, then it's not going to happen. But it's because you're just so intent upon this experience in the mind and going into the heart deeper and deeper, then as that happens, after it's happened, then you notice, oh, okay, that's what it's like. You know, the feeling of the body just seems to have almost become very vague or very faded. But it's still there. And so you go into this feeling. Now, up until this stage, this is still what we call the Uggaha Nimitta, the preliminary Nimitta. And I spoke about this a little bit in my talk on Anapanasati a little while ago. Developing the Metta Nimitta is very similar, and the experience is very similar to that of developing Anapanasati, although a little bit different. The flavor is slightly different. The flavor of the Metta is a little bit different, a little bit sweeter. The Metta feeling is a little bit sweeter. The feeling of Anapana is a little bit brighter, a little bit more airy. The feeling of Metta is a little bit richer. So as you continue with this, you keep on going deeper and deeper and deeper into that. Now it's very important, as this happens, and as you have that enthusiasm and the impetus towards the object, what will happen is that the nimitta will tend to respond, okay? As you go deeper, the nimitta will respond and become stronger, and then the mind tends to get excited by that, okay? Which of course causes it to go away. And so you have this cycle. So the mind goes on this cycle of more of settling in and going deeper into the object, and then getting a bit excited and have this kind of expectations and thrill, and then sort of pulling back a little bit because of that. And so this keeps on going on and on, this cycle. Okay? A little bit by little bit it goes deeper, but it doesn't go, it's not linear. It keeps on going round in cycles and circles like that. And one of the paradoxes of this kind of practice is that when we talk about the experience or the nimitta becoming stronger, and this is something which you would have experienced so far, actually the feelings that you're experiencing become much, much more subtle. So a strong experience of a nimitta, of the feelings of pleasure and rapture in the meditation, the strong feelings are not actually, the deep feelings are not actually strong, they're not actually overpowering, overwhelming feelings. They become very, very subtle. It's quite common, if you're developing metta meditation, it's quite common in the first couple of stages that you'll be sitting there with a big goofy grin on your face, yeah? And you have that kind of metta, and you'll be sitting there smiling away as you're feeling, oh, okay, and there's this happiness and this kind of joy bubbling up inside you and this welling up of rapture. In this fourth stage, all of that will be gone. It'll become, the bliss and the rapture becomes, as it were, very serious. Okay? And your mind becomes almost, it's difficult to say this without sounding wrong, but it becomes almost stuck. Like the feeling of samadhi is almost like a sense of setness about it, like it's set like concrete. And that's not in a, you know, it sounds like a bad thing when you say it like that. It sounds like the mind's getting, you know, rigid or anything. It's not like that. It's just getting set in its place and not wanting to move. And so that kind of feeling of setness starts to arise in the mind as it's focusing deeper and deeper and deeper on that meditation. As we continue, then you need to keep on trying to just keep on staying there and not be doing anything. It's very, very important at this stage. You've done all of your preliminary work, okay? You've done all the bits and pieces that you need to do. If you've got this far in your meditation, then your mind is already in a pretty good way. You're already pretty balanced. You've already got a reasonable level of mindfulness. You've already got a reasonable level of energy. You've already got a reasonable level of understanding of how your mind works and how you're going about your meditation, okay? So you're doing very well. And all of that, all of the stuff you needed to do, all of the groundwork is all done. And now you just need to forget all those things and just stay exactly where you are. You just stay right there on that, staying exactly with that experience. And as that happens, the mind will gradually go deeper and deeper into that experience. And so on one hand, we talk about the experience becoming stronger, and that feeling of setness becomes stronger. That one is focused and collected around that experience in a more strong way. But the actual feeling, it becomes more and more subtle as one keeps going. More and more subtle, focusing in on that. And so at this stage, you've got to understand that anything that you do is going to damage it. Okay? Any kind of adjustment or trying to go push further or pull back or change the focus or anything at all is going to stuff it up. Anything at all. Just keep on going. And you have to really trust your mind at this stage. Not that your mind is trustworthy, okay? Your mind can still play tricks on you at this stage. You can still go down the wrong avenue, okay? That's still possible. You've still got hindrances in the mind, okay? But nevertheless, you just have to trust it, okay? You have to give it your trust. And then just go with that, on and on and on and on. And this just takes a lot of patience. And this stage of developing this fourth stage will often take, say, an hour or more, maybe 2 hours, maybe 3 hours to get there. Just as on average, you know, if your meditation's going very well, if you take maybe 40 minutes or so to develop the first stage and maybe 10 to 20 minutes to develop each of the second and third stages. And so after an hour and a half of meditating, then you reach the fourth stage. This is assuming everything's going well and the energy's flowing. And then you reach the fourth stage and then you can develop that for anywhere. Maybe not take very long. Maybe sometimes can only take a few minutes and then you can have a very strong limiter arise. Or it can take a long time, maybe 1 hour, maybe 2 hours, maybe 3 hours, or even longer. And so you just have to have that sense of patience with that. Just being very, very patient, just staying there. No matter what it does, just staying. And if the energy gets stronger or weaker or whatever, just stay. Just keep on going. Don't do anything, just keeping the focus right there, keeping that on and on and on. Okay, so this is my talk for this week on developing the fourth stage. So let's do some guided meditation now. sitting comfortably. Allowing one's awareness to settle back inside the body. Coming through in the body, imagining, visualizing one's own skeleton, starting with the skull, feeling the shape of the skull, the roundness of it, feeling the texture of it, color. Moving awareness around, seeing the different parts of the skull, the eye holes, cheekbones, the jaw with the teeth set in it. Feeling what that's like. And then the spine, feeling the vertebrae attached to the skull at the top and then curving down. The whole body hanging off. Each vertebrae has its own complex shape. This feeling, what that's like. Coming back up to the collarbones. Shoulders, shoulder blades, and then the arms, the bones of the arms attached to the shoulders, large bones in the upper arm. The thinner bones in the forearm. And the very complex system of bones in the hand. Looking at the rib cage, imagining all the ribs there holding the body out, keeping the shape of the upper body. and then the pelvis. Feel the hips. The bones of the legs. Upper bones. Knee. Kneecap. The bones in the lower part of the leg and the feet. And then bringing awareness back to like a full bone awareness, full skeleton awareness. Just getting an image in your mind of your own skeleton as you're sitting here. And then starting with the first stage of metta. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Keeping the mind on that feeling of the bones. Just saying those words inside there. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And you can fill the skeleton up with the feeling of metta. Feeling one's own bones glowing from inside. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And when that feels full and complete, you can move to the second stage. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. Holding the feeling of metta still, cool, clear. Inside one's own body. And to the third person, may that neutral person be happy. May that neutral person be happy. May that neutral person be happy. Keeping the mind focused and clear, alert, eager. And then to the fourth stage, to the disliked person. Holding that person very, very gently, very carefully in mind. May that disliked person be happy. May they be happy. May they be happy. coming back to the neutral person. May that neutral person be happy. May that neutral person be happy. May that neutral person be happy. May the loved person be happy. May the loved person be happy. May the loved one be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Letting the words of metta go. Letting the feeling of metta fade away. And allowing the mind to return to neutral space. Empty. Open. Clear. Just taking a minute to reflect and review over the meditation, inquiring into cause and effect. What just happened? How did my mind respond to the different stages of meditation? How did it feel when I went to that fourth stage? Was I able to keep my mind focused on the metta for that person? Or did I start thinking about that person and starting to proliferate and give rise to negative thoughts and emotions? Did the energy of the metta stay still and steady through all the stages? Finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings rejoice in the merit that we've made through our practice. May all beings finally realize Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Does anyone have any comments or questions about this stage of practice?
Sometimes that whole, like you are peaceful throughout the whole thing, really good. Sometimes it's like that, but sometimes at the third stage I've got the skeleton's really nice and the skeleton and I have a really good relationship and it's fun and it's great. And then there's a flash of his skeleton in my picture. And it fills me with such a hot fury and gone. And And then I have to start over and think, well, last year he was nice once, and, you know, and try and build it up again. But it's really, it's not peaceful anymore. And when the dislike is there, it's very difficult to remove it.
Yeah. This is a problem with not doing enough, not being grounded enough on the practice of equanimous awareness. The problem here is not a problem with metta, it's a problem with equanimity. And so that's why the kind of emotional shift when it happens is very dramatic. So you need to spend more time just developing pure equanimity with whatever happens. Just watching, not reacting, not responding. Okay, let's finish by paying respects.
Bhagavato Sangha Sangha Sangha.